Yeah, baby.
Here we go. We're going live right now.
The Killer Bees are counting down to Texans training camp.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
With the top 10 storylines of the Houston Texans season.
Tackle football, let's play. Top storylines of the Houston Texans 2022 season. Did you know training camp started today?
I've heard a few times.
Training camp started today. Cody was over there. Cody Stutes was over there. So was Paul Gallant, Vanessa.
They were?
Yeah.
Oh, prior to their show?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's the only time they could have made it.
Well, I don't know how they could have even worked it in with prep and everything else, but okay.
Well, you know, they can get prep in.
All right.
You know, they can talk about the ESPN 97.5 lineup and
we had it covered.
Relate them to quarterbacks around the league. Anyways, Cody was wearing, because I know a lot of people were very concerned about what Cody was wearing. He was wearing his normal, like, Hawaiian-ish. It's not even Hawaiian. It's Hawaiian-ish.
But it's a Friday.
It's Hawaiian-ish.
Okay.
Shorts, sneakers. Sneakers out at the facility. He was wearing his bucket hat. But his bucket hat was, like, pulled down to, like, covering half of his eyeballs. He had it all the way down. Like, I felt bad for the top of the bucket hat with how far he had it yanked down. But, hey, to each their own. Anyways, top storyline ahead of the 2022 Houston Texans season. We got into it a little bit last second, and Bill Barnwell helped us out as well. What is Davis Mills? Let's start there. There's two questions here. What is Davis Mills, and do the Texans need to draft a quarterback? But let's start with Mills. What is Davis Mills right now in 2022, and what is the range of what Davis Mills will prove to us that he can be in 2022? Because Dick Willie loves himself some Davis Mills.
Oh, yes, he does.
And Davis Mills, and Dick's point is that he needs more time. And I actually agree with him in that front. Like, we need more intel on Davis Mills before we're making a decision on Davis Mills. We need more data on Davis Mills before we're making a decision on Davis Mills, which if you ever compared a radio host to that quarterback, a radio host probably doing some good things. I digress. What is Davis Mills?
What's the ceiling, though?
What is Davis Mills right now?
He's a guy that is given the opportunity to start. He is a guy that is being hounded minute by minute by a massive P word.
Which one?
Potential. He is being followed around morning, noon, and night by the word potential. And now you need to figure out what kind of potential he has. Could he potentially suck? Yes. Could he potentially be the starter for the next couple of years? Yes. Is it where does the truth lie? We don't know, but we're about to find out. So I think that when you look at it, you say, there's no turning back now. There's no other alternatives. They're not going to bring in a guy last minute, and we already know that everybody else has landed with the exception of whatever happens with Garoppolo, and we've already said we don't want him. So you are living with this guy for the next 17 games of the regular season, and you hope he stays healthy, and you hope you get a really clear analysis of who he is at the end of those 17 games, and then you make your judgment going forward as to what he can be and what he means to you as a franchise, and then also, as it relates to anything else, what he means to other franchises in this league. Hopefully, you have options. Hopefully, you end up more towards the top end of the spectrum than the bottom end of it. But it's just a massive question mark and a P following him around everywhere he goes.
Yeah, I think right now what he is that he is an overachieving third rounder that has overexceeded expectations after a year, which is a very complimentary thing to say about Davis Mills. After Davis Mills was drafted, everybody thought that Nick Caserio was reaching. You're cowering to the Deshaun Watson trade demands. You wanted Kellen Mond. You didn't get him. You got stuck with Davis Mills. And then Davis Mills was an embarrassment during camp, and it was an embarrassment in his first stint as a starting quarterback in the NFL. His second stint as a starting quarterback, he looked like a starting caliber quarterback in the National Football League. He earned this opportunity to be the Houston Texans quarterback in 2022. So I think Davis Mills, for where he was drafted, what you thought of him, where he even was after you saw him on the field, whether it was camp, whether it was his first stint as a starting quarterback in the National Football League, he has overexceeded expectations.
Can I just say on one thing, just on the overexceeded the third round expectation, can we put an asterisk on that simply because of the fact that it was an odd year, right? We really didn't get full analysis to where everybody, and even Bill Barnwell said that, you know, you look at it and say, you know, in a regular year, could he have been drafted higher? Sure. I just don't know that he overexceeded expectations as a third round pick, because I think that maybe in a regular college football season, he might have been higher. And I'm not even going to say first round pick.
But he would have also been a year older. So, like, if you're looking at 2022.
If you take the pandemic out of it, if it was just a regular college football season, would he have been a higher pick? Yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, that's also credit Nick Caserio,
sure,
right?
That's
credit Nick Caserio because he did spend a third rounder. So that was the investment on Davis Mills, regardless if there was a weird 2020, regardless of the fact that he came out a year sooner than people thought he would come out. Davis Mills compared to every other rookie in 2022. Where does Davis Mills stack up? Probably top two, top three, if not the best rookie in 2022.
And yeah.
So Mills, when you're comparing him to the rest of the quarterback class as rookies in 2021, Davis Mills over exceeded expectations. So that's who he is coming into the 2022 season. He's a quarterback who has exceeded expectations. I think he's one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the NFL, to be honest with you. And he's somebody that also has a lot to prove going forward. Because, yes, the sample size is small. The data is small on Davis Mills. And this is an opportunity for him to cement a spot forever in the NFL, and namely with the Houston Texans if he plays to that point. Now, where Davis Mills is at the end of the season, the range of Davis Mills, I still think because the sample is small and the data that we have is not very vast, that Davis Mills can be anywhere at the end of the season from a top 15 quarterback to a top 40 quarterback in the National Football League. I still think there's a lot of variance when we're trying to evaluate Davis Mills as a quarterback, especially throughout the entire year. But we will get some more clarification at the end of the season, obviously, because he's playing 17 games, barring injury. The thing that scares me, Blinkers, I don't know how you feel about this. The thing that scares me is that he ends the season where he is now, where you still don't really know. You're like, okay, he could be, but I'm not entirely sure.
I think the worst possible outcome after everything that you said that I and the picture I painted to when you asked me the question would be that you are still stuck in the middle at the end of the season. You either want to know unequivocally this is the guy, or at least he has the potential to still be the guy, or you want to know that he's a backup at best, right? You don't want him kind of lingering somewhere in the middle where you're still wondering, like maybe he got dinged up a couple of times, missed some games, and you're like, if he played a full season, could they have done this? Could he have done that? You don't want to be left kind of hanging because it's so vitally important what you do with your draft picks in the next year or two, to where you have to get at least some determination by the end of the season where you either can say definitively, I want another quarterback and we need one, or I can say, we're good there for now.
You can't be in purgatory. You can't be the Chuck Hayes, Moochie Norris Rockets where you're stuck right there as the 9th, 10th best team in the Western Conference going 41-41. Like, Davis Mills needs to boom or needs to bust.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happy if it's a boom. I'm rooting for the boom. I want to be wrong when it comes to Davis Mills. I hope it's boom. I hope it's bust. We don't need any of the in-between. So now the second part of the question, and I think that you've hinted to this, and I think you hinted to it to Bill, to be honest. Do the Texans need to draft a quarterback?
I really believe they do. I believe that, look, and I look at what Nick Caserio's background is. I look at the fact that they were never scared to draft another quarterback, even when they had Tom Brady. And people could scratch their temples and look at it and go, why, what, you know, what are you doing? But it seemed to always make sense and work out for them one way or the other. They didn't do the Green Bay scenario where they completely tripped on their you-know-whats, trying to think that they had stunned the league and gotten pulled one over by getting Love, and now he's in the last year of his deal, and if he walks at the end of the year, he's not the guy. He never played anything for you. He prevented you from getting a player that could have helped you, and you walk away from it going, you guys are a bunch of dumbasses that just got extensions. If you look at what New England was always able to do, whether they kept him or they moved him, and they moved Jimmy G and they moved other guys, they proved they had value. They weren't dumb enough to just ride just that one trick pony instead of realizing competition brings out the best in everybody. They determined who was still the best guy. The best man won. You got paid very well for the other guy, and you moved forward by bettering your team. That's what they do. That's what they will do. I still say no matter what happens this season, they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round next year.
You think it's first round no matter what, huh?
I do.
See, I
because there's five guys to choose from.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's
legitimately base. Three, but probably five.
And we know how much quarterback movement there is when we're talking draft classes a year in advance. I mean, Matt Barkley's a good example of that. Matt Barkley, you know, a decade ago was the number one mock draft quarterback going into what was going to be his final year of college, and all of a sudden he's a mid-round draft pick. The recent example, Spencer Rattler last year. I think probably July 29, 2021, Spencer Rattler was going to be the number one pick of the 2022 NFL draft. So a lot of things happen. I think Battery Chuck has a really good point, too, about the Texans and drafting a quarterback. He says they'll draft one, either as a backup to Mills based on the season or a replacement for Mills based on the season. That's the beauty of the 2022 season for the Houston Texans, and that's why it's our top storyline, is because Davis Mills is going to be the lead story almost every single game for the Houston Texans in 2022. And it doesn't matter the results
of the
field.
Though?
I think so.
I think it's great, and I think that from where this fan base has come from, with what we've had to endure in the negativity of surrounding this franchise and Deshaun Watson and Jack Easterby and all the different crap that was following him, I'm fine with the fact that, thankfully, we have something that we can look at as an optimistically positive storyline.
What was the lead storyline last year?
Deshaun's walk, his walk of shame every day.
Yeah, but I mean, you never knew, like, he wasn't going to play. So, like, it's frustrating that
but
the top storyline last year.
There were people that still thought, oh, somehow he's going to play.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think you're, I mean, you're right. I guess hindsight 2020, he was never going to play. But at least now you have a storyline of, okay, what can Davis Mills become in 2022? But it's not about the wins or losses when it comes to the top storyline and Davis Mills being the lead story every Sunday when we're talking Monday mornings after the games on Sunday. If they lose, we're going to be bashing Davis Mills. If they win, we're going to be looking to see what Davis Mills did. If he's playing really well in loss or victory, we're going to be talking about Davis Mills. Like, it almost matters more how Davis Mills plays this year, and again, boom or bust, I don't care which way it goes, then the victories.
And I think you're right, because I think that it's going to be fair or unfair. He's probably going to take blame and or credit where it's probably not due in a lot of cases, too. Whether they win, if they lose a game, and it could be that someone dropped a ball, or it could be that the defense let you down, he's still going to probably be, it's still going to be pinned more on him and evaluate, he's going to be more evaluated than anybody that did something good or bad in each of those games.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You can answer our top storyline if you'd like. What is Davis Mills entering the 2022 season? And if you fast forward to the 2023 NFL draft, do the Texans need to draft a quarterback? Speaking of quarterbacks, Vanessa and Gallant, they compared every single radio host on ESPN 97.5, 7A to 7P, to NFL quarterbacks. What did they say about us, and who would they be? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Earlier today on Vanessa and Gallant, they had a great segment in which each of them, Vanessa, Gallant, Sean, they all compared an NFL quarterback to every single ESPN radio host from 7A to 7P. Let's start with Blankers and what the Vanessa and Gallant had to say about Joel.
With Joel Blank, I did go with Aaron Rodgers, not only because Joel's a massive Packers fan, but because Joel does have the ability to go there. If you need Joel on your side, if you need Joel to stand up for you the way that Aaron would stand up for Devontae Adams during his contract negotiations, and if you need somebody that can be a little spicy, there's your Joel Blank.
So that was Vanessa on Blank. Now, Paul said he was Derek Carr. I forget what Sean said that you were, but how does it feel being compared by Vanessa to your favorite quarterback of all time?
I mean, from Hall of Famer to Hall of Famer, at least I'm there. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I have to, you know, take out of that. I said to Vanessa when I walked in the studio, I hope you just meant on the football field and in the locker room and not the ridiculous way that he carries himself off the field in so many ways. But I think from an ability standpoint, it makes me feel good.
Yeah, I think it's a good comp. Now, what was that little diet that Aaron Rodgers did? The PK, Puma Contra, or whatever.
Look,
do you remember what it was called?
All I know is that if I remember anything about it, all of mine are exit only, and that's where we're going to keep it that way.
Battery Chucker on Twitch pointing out spicy was a funny way to define Joel.
Yeah, that's a fair thing to say. A little pica on John Blankers over here.
Yeah, it's a mild way of saying that if I need to be an a-hole, I can be one. And if I get pissed off, I can take it to that level, too.
I think spicy is a fair thing to describe. I think you actually like that. I think that you like being called spicy.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't say that I shy away from it. I know sometimes I deserve it. And I know sometimes I can go there.
How did you feel about Paul calling you David Carr's brother, Derek?
Not exactly pleased with that, but I mean, at least I wasn't Kirk Cousins. I mean, at least I was like top 12. I don't know.
I don't remember what Sean said. Do you remember?
I didn't hear it.
I don't remember what Sean said that your comparison was. Now, here was Vanessa's comparison with your boy Branham over here.
For Jeremy Branham, sturdy, trustworthy, doesn't cause controversy, plays by the rules, but still is very good at his job. Jeremy Branham is Davis Mills.
There you go. I've never been more insulted in my life. Let's start there.
And I have never been more insulted for you.
Now, the things that she used to describe Davis Mills, sturdy, reliable, won't rock the boat, although don't tell PC or Granado that, does big things in the city, salt of the earth.
Your neck's not like, that long.
Like all those things, I'd be happy to be described with those, you know, those words. Sturdy, reliable, won't rock the boat, big things in the city, salt of the earth. I'm not sure Vanessa knows who Davis Mills is. Like, are we describing Davis Mills as sturdy, reliable, does big things in the city?
Probably. Well, yeah, probably not. I mean, I think that we've already overly broken down Davis Mills. I'm just offended because of the fact that I think you've already proven yourself. I think that you are, you know, on the younger side of up and coming and still have much more to achieve, so we still don't know your ceiling, but I don't think we'd start as low as Davis Mills.
Yeah.
When you hear the descriptors, where did you think she was going? Because I said the same thing. When I heard her, like, drop Davis Mills at the end of this, I actually laughed out loud just because I was not ready for it.
I was thinking Burrow, Herbert, something along those lines, a young up-and-coming quarterback, Whoa. Not the best in their craft.
Now you might be overinflating the balloon
so.
A little bit.
I think that's accurate. I think that would be the accurate description of me, because listen to Paul's description of me. Paul called me Pat Mahomes, the best quarterback in the entire NFL. Sean called me Lamar Jackson, guy who catches more flack than he deserves. Bad Take Boulevard, Twitter backs and forths, all of that. So I feel like it'd be very much in the same thing. Now, Sean called you Brady. I do remember that now. Intense, willing to call you out. Apollo Men's Health equals the TB12 diet. I think that's good. I think it's accurate.
If I get Brady, Rodgers, and then Carr, I'll take two out of three. I'm living with and living very, very comfortably.
And I'm good with mine.
Yeah.
I'm good with mine. Mahomes, even though I criticize Lamar, former MVP, and Davis Mills.
That's... I don't think there could have been a funnier person to give Davis Mills to than Jeremy.
It was so unfair.
I started cracking up because I was listening to the car whenever they were talking about that, and she said all those words. I was like, okay, Burrow, okay, Herbert. Davis Mills? What?
To me, Granada.
Davis Mills?
To me, Granado of our station, Granado's Tom Brady.
Okay. See, I think you would go Brady with either Granado or Lance.
Right.
One of those two has to be Brady. And then the other one, whichever one you're not giving Brady, has to be the second best quarterback in the entire world.
John's been at it longer, too, because Lance did other things dabbling before he got into radio. Mm-hmm. I think John's definitely Brady.
All right. Let's give one out to Vanessa and Gallant. If you were comparing Vanessa, let's start with Vanessa.
Let's start with Vanessa.
First.
Yep.
So, Paul. Paul's where we'll begin. I'm just kidding. You're describing a quarterback, comparing a quarterback to Vanessa. Who would be your quarterback that use your comp for Vanessa Richardson?
Mac Jones.
Okay, tell me
Mac
why.
Mac Jones, because young, kind of basically came out of nowhere in the draft class in terms of what was expected of him as opposed to everybody else, but came onto the scene, not only did well, excelled, got the team to the playoffs, did things that weren't expected of that team, took the team to another level, gave them a fresh new look. And I think that still has the potential to get even better as the career progresses. So I think for those reasons and more, I think that she's the Mac Jones.
Okay. You know, early in her career,
yep.
Showed great promise. I like that one. I like where that one's at. I'm giving Vanessa Justin Herbert. Somebody who I think has the potential to be great. Somebody who is young in the professions, eventually going to be really good. So I went with kind of the potential play there, but already very good. Already plays at a very high level. Already playing at a very high level, and there's still a runway there. There's still a room for growth to get even better.
So mine for Vanessa kind of depends on giving mine for Paul. So can I go backwards here?
Sure, yeah. You can start Paul off for us.
I mean, we're just puppets, so you can do whatever you want.
So Paul, I went with Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
And I was thinking of the way that he does radio, all over the place, quick to escape the pocket. Makes plays happen while escaping the pocket, certainly. but you just never really know what's going to happen when Lamar Jackson's the quarterback.
Yeah, that's fair.
And on the flip side, and why I thought I needed to go Paul first, with Vanessa, I went Josh Allen. And it's because she recognizes the value of making plays with your feet, or kind of going all over the place, following Paul where they go. but also is a very strong pocket passer and can keep things on track.
Josh Allen's high praise.
It really is.
Josh Allen's high praise.
I mean, I like where you guys are going with the potential play, which maybe I'm not doing so much with Josh Allen, but I was just thinking the way of the show sounds.
I mean, Allen's still young and has room to grow, right? I mean, MVP in Josh Allen's career, Super Bowl in Josh Allen's career. So I think there's potential there for Allen as well.
I was just thinking, like, when you listen to Paul, he goes all over the place.
Oh, sure.
And she does keep him on track to an extent. Who is the quarterback who can make plays with their feet, but isn't necessarily as reliant on it. And I think Josh Allen is the perfect example of that.
Versatile, can audible, all those things. Who do you have for Paul?
Gardner Minshew.
What?
Because much to the way that that Brendan said about Paul, but not to the praise of Lamar Jackson, I think he's all over the place. I mean, he can go everywhere, but he can make big plays. He can do things that excite you, but yet he still wants to wear a Top Gun jacket and make sure that people capture his every move.
The off-the-field is perfect.
He lives in a freaking RV for like more than half a year or a year at a time. You know, he's very emotional with his family and kissing his dad and doing all these things like I could see Paul doing. You know, and I believe that Paul could be either Gardner Minshew or maybe Jalen Hurts.
You teased us with Gardner Minshew in pre-show but didn't give the reason, and I was not sure I could buy it. But when you get to the off-the-field, I see it entirely.
Why Jalen Hurts?
Because I think from Jalen Hurts, he belongs, and he's talented. And I think that he has the ability to do so many things so many different ways, but I think that sometimes he just gets kind of out of the pocket and gets all scrambled.
I've never heard you define Jalen Hurts that way with so much praise. Mine for Paul is Russell Wilson. And this might not be a great comp in terms of age because Paul's still very young. Paul still has a lot of years left in him, where Russell Wilson maybe not. But Russell Wilson, kind of on his second stage of his NFL career, just left the market of Seattle, going to a big city where he is a focal piece for that new team, very much like Paul. He's on his, you know, not his first stage of his radio career. He left the Seattle market. He heads back to a big city market where he is a pivotal piece on his new team. So my Paul comparison is Russell Wilson.
Are you predicting Russell Wilson return to Seattle?
Yeah. See, it's not a perfect comparison, as all comparisons are not. But maybe, who knows?
I thought about Russell Wilson, too. I just think he's better in the pocket.
And I also think, because I did the age thing. With Russ, he's too old to be Paul.
Yeah, I could see that. 4624. Never mind. I'm not going to read that. 713-780-ESPN. I'm not going to read what E said on Twitch either. Anyways, coming up at 2 o'clock, by the way, top of the hour. It's what we do every Friday at 2. Who said it? And the Killer Bees are going to go toe-to-toe with a listener. We had a lot of listeners last week, a lot of soft listeners last week that texted us and said, we would have beat you. Okay, well, this is your chance. Beat us today at 2 o'clock. We'll be playing Who Said It Again against the listeners. So make sure you're tuned in then and make sure you call in then. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Joining us when we return, though, the general manager for the Houston Astros when they went to their first ever World Series in 2005. Tim Perpura joins the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line. We're joining us now, former Houston Astro general manager Tim Perpura, who was in charge of the Astros in 2005. Took the first Texas team to a World Series. Tim, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us on this Friday afternoon. I wanted to ask you first about that 2005 season. What are some of your best memories of that 05 year when the Astros got to their first World Series in franchise history?
Well, it was, I guess the way I look back on it was exhaustion and exhilaration, because we had such a horrendous start to the season at 15-30. And, you know, it was one of those situations where you start thinking about, well, are we good enough? Do we have to make some changes? And, you know, the one thing that, you know, whether it was our players or our staff or Phil Garner, we just kept looking at each other and saying, you know, we're better than this. We've had this firm belief that we were going to play better. And, you know, we did it. you know, we went on such an unbelievable run those last 4 months of the season that it put us in the right place. But, you know, the other thing I think a lot about is how great our pitching was with Oswalt and Clemens and Pettit. You know, we were formidable, and our pitching is what got us to the playoffs and got us to the World Series.
Tim, I'm curious, too, as you look at baseball landscape today and you see how much analytics plays in, it almost dominates almost every decision that's being made by organizations and how it differs from when you were talking about that time you were with the Astros and the heyday of Houston Astros baseball and the start of it. What are your thoughts now on how much baseball has kind of transformed into being so analytical?
Well, I'm very much a fan of it. And really, you know, even back when I was with the Astros, you know, we had some analytical bent to what we did. You know, we had, you know, particularly in the pitching side, we had our pitching coordinator was Dewey Robinson, and very much an analytical guy. And what we tried to do, was, particularly when I was farm director, was we tried to come up with our own analytics. When, you know, we had a degree of difficulty score for pitchers. We had, you know, a pitch efficiency thing. You know, and things that were kind of under the radar screen, you know, nobody really knew about them, but we did it, and we used it from a development view. So I definitely think analytics are helpful in from a development point of view. But I also think that this wave of analytics is really going to benefit player health, because there's so many things that we can learn about, you know, how players are performing, you know, maybe decisions that have to be made. But it's I'm a big fan. I watch the game almost every day. I still read, you know, the stats every day, and you know, some of the more esoteric stats are, you know, I'm interested in too. But you know, it's I think the only thing that I regret about the analytics movement is that, you know, it really moved out of the game some of the more traditional coaches have in the game. But, you know, they aren't from that background of being, you know, an analytical type.
Tim Perpura joining us on the HRMP guest line, the first general manager to take a Texas team to the World Series. And, of course, the trade deadline this year, August 2nd, the only trade deadline. There's no waivers trade deadline like the Astros used to acquire Justin Verlander. You've been in the chair. You've made the calls. You've been on competitive teams, buyers, I'm sure, throughout your entire career. You've had some sellers as well. What are these days like leading up to the deadline for a general manager in Major League Baseball?
Well, you know, the emphasis on 24/7 is what you have to buy into, you know, if you're in that situation. You know, we were fortunate. We were able to bring our major league scouts and, you know, even our upper level player development folks. We bring them into Houston. We had a war room. You know, we operated that way. You know, that was our basis of operations. And you know, guys make calls and go off and, you know, have conversations with other clubs. You know, then I would take club, you know, input from our guys and escalate it and start talking to your manager. So you have to have a number of people, you know, because deals are so hard to, you know, and you know, I really marvel sometimes now at some of the multi-team.
Tim, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you hopping on. We hope to catch up again at some point. Connection, obviously, there, just not for error. So we hope to get Tim Perpura back someday. A couple of things I really wanted to ask him. Like, it was fascinating, the like, being in that chair. Because you can imagine the calls that are being made and, like, the tech, like, I'm sure it's even like text messages, it's emails, it's all of this stuff. You have your own, you know, scouting department, you know, putting in their mindset or their thoughts and, like, certain players that you might look to acquire as well. I'm sure it's a fun, like, week or so, and there's build up before that week, but I imagine it's pretty taxing and exhausting as well.
Oh, no doubt. And I think that just seeing it from an NBA standpoint, how little sleep guys got, how they were at the office at all hours of the morning, noon, and night, how meals were being called in because they didn't want to leave. And, you know, I was thinking about it as you were saying that. Can you imagine, like, when we do all these, you know, unsolved mysteries and things, when people want to go back and look at the trail of what text messages were sent when? Could you imagine if uncovered text messages came out of the deals that weren't done over the years and discussed, and you know, and how a conversation started that ended up developing into a trade that?
Remember, you know, whenever Carlos Correa, not the Astro, but the St. Louis Cardinal executive that stole, like, Astros information? Yeah. Remember some of the trade stuff leaked? Like, obviously what Carlos Correa was doing was illegal and he spent time in jail. But as a viewer and as somebody entertained by that kind of stuff, it was awesome to see, like, the text messages and, like, the trade proposals that were out there.
Yes, no doubt. It would be, I mean, must-see TV if there was ever, like, a docuseries that got into, like, you know, from agents and general managers and discussions and, like, from start to finish, how some of the biggest trades in baseball got done. That would be like, even going down to the deadline with Verlander, the discussions that were going back and forth to convince him to stay. And remember, he said he talked to Keuchel and others before he made the final decision to come to Houston, and it would be, you know, good for him. And I would love, that would just be so intriguing, because the thing I wanted to ask Tim was, much to what we were talking about as it relates to the Astros currently, when you have the surplus of starting pitching you have, like, when do you know that it's okay to go and make a trade like that, even if it's for a rental? And then the other thing that was intriguing to me is different when he was talking about analytics, like, different from when he was in the seat, when you have a franchise that says we're not into it for long-term big money deals, how limiting is that as a general manager?
Right. Yeah, that would have been a great question to get him to answer from his perspective. The you know, he was the GM in 05, went to the World Series. Now, there have been people critical of his tenure as the general manager of the Houston Astros and the, you know, lack of aggression, things like that. But as an assistant general manager under Jerry Hunsaker, which I think is the second best general manager in Houston Astro history, he was an assistant for Hunsaker from 97, I believe, until 2000 through 2004. Then Hunsaker left. It was like a senior advisor for the Tampa Bay Rays, eventually the Dodgers. But then Papura took over that first year and just really took the team and, you know, didn't rattle it, didn't mess it up, got to the World Series, and then ultimately fell short to the White Sox. But Papura, in his tenure with the Astros, was the assistant GM to Hunsaker when they first traded for Randy Johnson in 98 and then again for Carlos Beltran in 2004. Yep. Those are the two biggest deadline trades in Houston Astro history. Throw in Justin Verlander into that equation as well. Those are the top three. I was hoping that we would get the chance to pick Papura's brain about the Randy Johnson deadline deal, and the Astros came out of left field as the team to acquire him when no one else was talking about it. And then the move for Beltran, who obviously was big in 04 and had one of the best postseasons almost ever.
Yeah, no, that would be, again, that would be really intriguing. It's unfortunate the connection wasn't better, because, I mean, a lot of people just hear the name, and I think he's forgotten about. I think Jerry Hunsaker, I think, was underappreciated to some degree because he was able to pull off a lot of deals and then kind of unceremoniously left town. And then people kind of forget Papura in between when you started to kind of do that transition to what we've come into now, when I start talking about analytics and the way that Luno basically left his legacy, both good and bad, as general manager of the Astros. But good to have him on, and I was curious. That's why I was asking Brendan, like, what's he doing now? Because you would think that he would still, with all of his experience, be inside of baseball somewhere, but not working currently for a team.
Brendan told me, too, that the Astros rehired him, was it in 16 or so? 16 or it was somewhere around there. Jeff,
I think it was
Luno.
14 through 17 he was a scout.
Yeah, Jeff Luno rehired him as a scouting director for the Astros. I had no idea.
I didn't know that either.
He's got a World Series ring, I imagine. If he
really?
Was, yeah, he's got a World Series ring. Jeff Luno rehired him.
Okay.
It's interesting, too, because, like, Papura replaced Hunsaker, one of the, you know, top two, in my opinion, best GMs in Houston Astro history, and then got rehired by Luno, who I think is the best general manager in Houston Astro history. Like, I wanted to get his perspective of replacing somebody who was really good at their job, kind of like James Click is replacing Jeff Luno and has been replacing Jeff Luno, who obviously was very good at his job in Major League Baseball. So people are texting in or twitching in at twitch.tv/ESPN975 saying mean things about Tim Papura. Why would you say mean things about Tim Papura? E said Hunsaker built us an awesome farm, and then Papura kind of was over the helm of that. But yeah, the Papura was very much part of that Houston Astro team, though, that they ran through the NL Central for those years with Bagwell and Biggio. Papura, while
what was the
not the GM that long, was very much a big part of that front office.
One single factor in getting that team over the hump, was it Bagwell just a shell of himself?
You're talking. What do you mean?
For the 05 team to win the World Series?
Yeah, Bagwell was done. Bagwell was toast. He didn't play again, I don't think, after that World Series.
No, I think that was it.
He retired after that World Series. He was not the same. 713-780-ESPN. Who said it coming up at the top of the hour, 2 o'clock? Killer Bees will be on toe-to-toe with one of you, the listeners. So make sure you're tuning into that if you want to compete against the Killer Bees. Because a lot of you on the text line last week talked a big game. Put your money where your mouth's at. 2 o'clock. Who said it against the Killer Bees? A listener against the Killer Bees. But when we return, August 2nd, deadline right around the corner for the Houston Astros for Major League Baseball. If the Astros land two pieces, what are the two pieces that you prefer by position? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Houston Astros are hot and heavy over some of these rental bats, maybe some over these club control bats as well. They've been rumored on several different players. Everybody's saying Click's being very, very aggressive. August 2nd trade deadline right around the corner in Major League Baseball. So it should be a lot of activity this weekend as we get closer and closer to that trade deadline, which, again, August 2nd. It'll be on Tuesday. It'll be a lot to talk about. If we assume that the Astros make two trades, they trade for two positions, what would those two positions be for you?
Well, for me, you know that I've been basically waving the flag all season for bullpen help. So it's in my top two, but surprisingly maybe to you and others, it's not number one. And that's simply because they've been good enough for me to not think it is the ultimate utmost priority. I think that they definitely need to improve it, but that's second on my list.
Okay.
First on my list is because there's so much surrounding Michael Brantley's availability, because we're still trying to fully evaluate Yuli Gurriel and what he can be for the last portion of the season in the playoffs. Because of the fact that you just can't rely on the bat of Chaz McCormick and Siri and Jake Myers and all the other potential outfield candidates you have, that the first thing on my list would be to get a bat outfield / first base. I think you know where I'm going there. But I think that that's why I would prioritize first and foremost bat like corner outfield first base. And then bullpen would be number two.
Okay. Look, I'm not anti-bullpen. I know we've kind of went back and forth on that a little bit, and I'll throw out the numbers out there saying, well, the Astros have the best bullpen in all of baseball, which I'm not sure where they are entering play today. But the reason that – look, I'm not anti-bullpen, but they don't crack my top two. They are still number one. For me, if I'm going by position, the first and foremost to me is first base. You have to have a plus bat at first base if you want to have a good offense. Look, the Astros are very good, second best record AL. Their odds of winning the World Series very, very high. But to acquire a first baseman also isn't like old yellering Yuli Gurriel. There's still ways to get Yuli Gurriel in the lineup, and who you're trading for comes into play there.
Better team offensively.
And you mentioned like the Mancini factor. Okay, well, Mancini can play some first base. He can play some left and right field, although not well. He can DH for you, which gives you opportunity for Yuli Gurriel. How often do we see Chaz McCormick in this lineup? How often do we see Mauricio Dubon in this lineup? How many at-bats do we see for J.J. Mattejevic? Yuli's still going to play for the Houston Astros, even if you trade for a first baseman. First baseman's at the top of my priority list if I get two. The second one to me, and again, because the relief pitching has been good, I can live with the relief pitching that you have. I'm not anti-relief pitching. They just don't crack my top two. The second position comes down for me, center fielder catcher, because I like Jake Myers. I think Jake Myers is the future center fielder for the Houston Astros long term. But I think that they put Jake Myers in a tough spot coming off of injury. You're thrown into being the everyday center fielder for a team who's the second best team in the AL, and we're expecting big things out of you. And Jake Myers at times looked overmatched. He's striking out at an alarming rate. He's not slugging at all. So I still want Jake Myers to be the future center fielder. I'm not sure I want him to be the center fielder for the next 3 months. The other position that's in the equation for me is catcher. We love what Martin Maldonado does in terms of being the battery mate for one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball, what he means, the leadership, the mound visits, which are very big for certain people in this city. All of that matters. And the Astros and even like the Tampa Bay Rays, they value the catcher position much differently than anybody else in baseball. They value the ability to call a game behind the dish. So I don't even know if the Astros are really looking to upgrade Maldonado, even though there's been rumors on Wilson Contreras. So it's a tough decision for me between the catcher spot and the center field spot. You can live with like one black hole in the lineup, whether it's Myers or whether right. it's the catcher position, in this case Maldonado. For me, it's center field. For me, it's center field, and also with the idea of if it's a controllable contract where he's going to be here for more than a year, now you have your Brantley replacement. So my top two, first base, center field, for you is like first base, corner outfield, DH type, and then a relief,
and then a relief pitcher. Yeah, and I think that catcher was third on my list, but I also firmly believe whether they pick someone up afterwards that gets released or something like that, you can find another alternative at backup catcher so that Corey Lee can just get the seasoning and experience and you can start him fresh next season. But I think that you need another veteran that, regardless of whether he starts or he's a backup, you need another veteran in with the catchers.
Now, I mean, it could be Maldonado, right? Like if you're
you could slide him, yeah.
If it's a Contreras trade. So what would be your top two positions? If you get two, what would be the two positions you upgrade ahead of Tuesday's deadline? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line now. Lamont, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's going on, Lamont?
Hey, nothing much. I had a question about the Astros form system, and it just this is very subjective. I hear so many people talking about how bad the Astros form system is not as good as it need to be. But every single year, it seems like I'm hearing about, for example, Jeremy Pena. For the longest, I was hearing about if Correa was the lead, they can slide Bregman over to a shortstop, not even really realizing that they had a Jeremy Pena. I'm talking about me here.
Yeah.
Not even really realizing that they had a Jeremy Pena, locked and loaded. But bottom line is, what I'm asking, I'm always hearing about the Astros form system being bad, but year after year I'm seeing players come up and they're producing. I'm wondering, what is this like really based up on people actually following the form system, or are we just hearing some people say some stuff and then we just run with it and it becomes the gospel?
Appreciate the call, Lamont. Look, I think the easiest answer to that is it's not bad. It's depleted. It's depleted for a reason. You made a Verlander trade where you gave up a lot of key prospects to go get Justin Verlander. You made a Greinke trade where you gave up four prospects that would have been very highly rated throughout your farm system. The more trades you made to acquire the guys that helped get you to be the team that you are today and have been for the last 5 years, we're taking resources out of that farm system, which brought that grade and that overall evaluation of your farm system down. We also see the De La Cruzes, and we see the guys that cut series, and we see these guys that come onto the scene because of their development, because the Astros saw something that other teams had given up on, or for one reason or another, that their farm system was able to develop them to get them to a level where other teams notice them enough to whether they help you or they help you make a trade that you otherwise wouldn't be able to do, that they've been beneficial. So I don't think it's derogatory with the Astros. It's more so just kind of because of the moves you made in the last several years.
Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment of the Astros minor league system for the reasons that you brought up. You've depleted your farm to an extent for being aggressive. Garrett Cole probably a little bit too far out, the Verlander maybe even too far, but Greinke, there were some prospects there. You made some trades along the way as well. But one of the critical reasons, too, is the fact that you had a couple of years of first-round draft picks taken away from you by Robert Manfred because you were doing something that the rest of Major League Baseball was doing, but you were the scapegoat for it. So that comes into play. Also, where the Astros have been drafting recently, you're drafting 30, 31, 32. You're not going to get as prized a prospect if you're drafting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like Correa, like Bregman. Tucker was very high. You used the savings on Correa for Lance McCullers. Luno played it well, but he also had very good draft picks to play it well with. The Astros have not had that luxury in a while. The Astros prospects that they currently have, too, are also a little bit older, right? So you have like a Pena who came up really out of nowhere. Like he just became a really good player. The COVID year, you didn't really know much about him because no one was playing minor league baseball in 2020. And every system's going to have like a couple of pieces. Like the Astros, even though they're like in the 20s and minor league pipelines, you still have Hunter Brown. You still have Pedro Leon. You still have Corey Lee. So there's still pieces there, but they're older. Where the Astros are really depleted are like double A and lower. You don't have a lot of like really flashy prospects. And I would also say with the prospect list too, they value potential. They value tools and skills. And as we know that That stuff doesn't always come to fruition.
And I also think, Jeremy, a lot of it is based on where you are as a team on the major league level currently. If you're a complete rebuild team, then your single A, double A are more replenished with quality talent. When you are a more major league competitive team right now, like the Astros are, even with their drafts, you're seeing more college players, more mature players, so that you can see who they are quicker, so that you feel like they can be on a fast track to get, you know, as high as they can in the minor leagues as quick as possible and maybe to the major leagues, so you can determine whether they can help you or other teams can determine whether they could be a quick add to a deal that gets you who you need to go where you want to go. So I think that because they're in a competitive World Series caliber type situation on the major league level, even where they draft now, it's not going to be a high school kid that in about 3 to 5 years could be someone that we really could use.
Yep.
It's going to be, we're going to take a center fielder from one of the best college programs in the nation and believe that in a year, 2, 3 years, we'll know exactly who he is and see whether he can help us or help another team by making a trade.
Yeah, see, that's part of it, too. Like, one, the Astros haven't been sellers to replenish the farm via trade. I like what Click did in this draft. Like, mm-hmm. Talking Major League Baseball draft is pretty niche, right? But the fact that they spent, what was it, their first 10 picks on college players, it's a way to try to expedite, you know, all of a sudden replenishing this minor league system with some, like, double-A-ish players right away. And then they also were able to get that 11th rounder that was a Vanderbilt commit out of high school, who's kind of a toolsy player with a lot of potential. And obviously there's more variance with high school players mm-hmm. than there are college players. But they were able to use some savings of the first 10 rounds to
attack.
And
they financially convinced him yep. to not go to Vandy and go right to their farm system.
They saved the money in the first 10 rounds to be able to aggressively attack a pretty hard verbal commit to a very good baseball program in Vanderbilt. And they're like, hey, how about you take this money and instead of going to a very good college program, you come to a very good baseball org, as we know that their director of player scouting or whatever likes to call it. 713-780-ESPN. You can pick two. You only get two, though. Which two positions would you upgrade if you're James Click ahead of the August 2nd deadline? Billy on Twitter says Josh Bell, please. Apollo Dez says Peralta, the outfielder for Arizona, who's more of a bench guy. His numbers aren't great this year, but he's been solid. And then Christian Walker, their first baseman. Walker's interesting because his projected numbers are very good. His real numbers have not been as good. Very low batting average, like under 220 at last check. But he's got some power. He's under club control for some years and very good defensive first baseman, too. So what would your two be? Two positions. You don't have to get specific with the names. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. And, of course, every Friday at 2 o'clock, it's Who Said It. This week's Who Said It will feature the Killer Bees against a mystery opponent. The mystery opponent is you, the listener. Call in right now. You'll have an opportunity, perhaps, if you're the lucky one, to go toe-to-toe with the Killer Bees. 713-780-3776 if you want to be a contestant on Who Said It against the Killer Bees. It's 713-780-3776. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I was there bright and early this morning. The reason why is because they made a difference in my life over the last several years because they found me a way to have energy, to be able to chart my progress from workouts, and to see what I could possibly be no matter what my age is. And they've done that because Doc O and his staff care about their patients. And when they care about their patients, they actually dive into making sure that they get results for you even more so than any place else. Because they want to see you smile. They want to know that they made a difference. And it's absolutely fantastic. You can go to ApolloMH.com right now and see all the different ways and all the services that possibly could help you. But from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you're having issues, they can find you results. They get the job done on a daily basis. Make that first appointment. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. You'll know that there's two locations to better serve you, both near downtown Houston. And you'll know that when you go, if you're honest with them when they ask you tough questions, they will find you results by putting you on a program that works. I believe in them. You will too. Mention my name, Joel Blank, on your first visit. Free B12 shot or free body composition analysis. But make sure you tell them exactly what you are trying to do and where you are trying to go. Your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself with the good people at Apollo Men's Health.